These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Welcome to Tuesday afternoon on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here. A little bit later in the program, Kelly Leonard will be along. Kelly, of course, from his long history at Second City, and he's the host of the podcast Getting to Yes, and we will talk about learning and living a life of learning and how humans, he says, he's learned, are not very good at it. One guy who's pretty good at learning, I think, is John Najarian from CNBC. He joins us on the phone line now. John, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. I'm not here.
So John is not quite ready for us. He's on the phone, I think, but we'll talk to John about what's going on Wall Street. Oh, Terry Savage will be here. You know, she's usually in on Wednesdays, but is going to stop by on Tuesday today because she's got a luncheon that she's coordinating tomorrow. Okay, Dr. J's on the phone line. John Najarian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you very much, big man. How are you doing today?
I'm well, thanks. Okay, before we do anything, Terry Savage is going to be on in a few minutes, and she's got a column up about learning to be a trader. You know, I think most people who listen to us here are long-term investors, but when it comes to active trading, and she sort of posits that when it comes to becoming a successful trader, that in a way, it's an innate skill, like being an athlete. It's something you might be born with. You're a pro athlete. You're a successful trader. What do you make of that?
Well, I would say that there is a strong relationship between anybody who has some sort of real discipline to what they do. You know, whether it was a gymnast, you wouldn't have to be a football player. For that matter, if you were somebody that just was extremely academic and competitive, as long as there was some discipline involved in doing what you did, I think you could be a good trader. It's all about cutting the losses, really.
And so you're saying it's just the stick-to-itiveness of it more than some sort of innate skill that you're born with?
In my opinion, yeah. But I certainly love Terry, and I can't wait to hear her opinion.
Well, she wanted me to ask you, so I'll mention that to her when she's on. Okay, let's go to Wall Street. The major indices, I think, at their highest level in the month. The NASDAQ up more than a point and a half today, a percent and a half, I should say, 107 points. It's not Netflix-driven, right? What's driving this?
No, not just Netflix, but all the FANG stocks are doing pretty well today. Facebook started off at $146 a share today, went right through 150 like a hot knife through butter. Huh. That's a stock that on Christmas Eve, Stephen, was $123 a share.
Wow.
As everybody was panicking about what sort of penalties they could be hit with. All of a sudden, they announced a share buyback. They caught the shorts, and they haven't let them breathe since. That's a lot of what's happened is that they've got people who have shorted the stock. Of course, that means sold it in hopes of buying it back cheaper, and they've caught them because they got short at perhaps not a good time.
So I mentioned Netflix earlier. They announced a rate hike, and they're being rewarded for that on Wall Street. The most popular fare, I guess, would go from $11 to $13. I think that's what I have at home. And, you know, we've talked through the last couple of years about how they're buying all sorts of original programming or buying programming and calling it original, and they say this will be for to help pay for that. You know, Netflix just fascinates me because, you know, they've been kicked when they're down. They've been lauded when they're up. I mean, just tell me, put them in perspective when it comes to the past 3 or 4 years and compared to the market in general.
I think their biggest competitor is, of course, Amazon. Amazon's got music as well as, of course, the Prime service. And if you have that Prime service, then you get the movies, the music, and that free two-day delivery. That's a huge thing. And Netflix has managed to beat back all the competition except for that, because that provides the Amazon user with something that Netflix really just can't compete with. That's the one I worry about them. I worry about more about Amazon as far as a competitor to Netflix than I do Disney, NBC, anybody else, Hulu. Nobody else can do what Amazon's doing, and they do it really, really well.
Is it an existential threat for Netflix?
It is. Yeah. It is a big threat for them. In my opinion, the more people start using the video and or music services over there at Amazon, it's one of the reasons why, even though I like the move today, and it may still go significantly higher, maybe through 400 in the not-too-distant future, I think that the competition is really going to really come to bear this year, 2019, on Netflix.
It's interesting you mentioned the competition with Amazon. It seems like every company is competing with Amazon on one front or another. Another one is Microsoft when it comes to cloud space, and they just announced a big deal with Walgreens. Explain that for me.
Sure. Well, Microsoft, you know, a lot of people, when they hear of Azure, first of all, they've never really heard of it. They think it's Azure, and they think it's some sort of a color. But these guys have just been killing it. Satya Nadella took them from there, including Microsoft on all these computer bundles, instead to being a subscription service. So that's reoccurring revenue. That's what everybody wants. And Satya Nadella has done a fabulous job, not just with that, but also with competing with Amazon. And that's one of the things that actually could work against Amazon in my former scenario, because they might have to focus even more attention and lower prices even more for AWS, Amazon Web Services, to hold on to the gains that they've made thus far.
You know, we've talked in the past about how we're becoming a subscription economy, and you really are explaining it pretty well. I mean, Netflix, I'm paying once a month for Netflix. I'm paying once a month or once a year now for my Microsoft Office, which I used to buy outright. I mean, I think these business leaders have figured out a way to keep the revenue coming in by slowly bleeding us dry. I mean, you know, the monthly payment is low enough to where it doesn't kill us, but we never really own anything anymore.
Right, and keep an eye on Apple for that same exact thing, Stephen, because, you know, it's not their services revenue. Only part of it right now is the $11 a month people might spend for their cloud, the use of that,
right,
you know, to have all their pictures and to-do lists, calendars, everything uploaded to the cloud. Now, that's becoming a must-have thing, and Apple is really winning that war with the consumer, the same way Amazon Web Services works with corporations.
All right, that's John Najarian from CNBC, the Najarian Family Office. What are you watching today, John?
All right. Today we were actually out there buying a fair amount of steel stocks, AKS. It's very cheap. It's definitely a cyclical. In other words, it goes from 9 down to 3, well, it's just done that. It usually takes about 2.5 years for it to do it. Now you're buying it under $3 a share. I like the upside from here for AKS.
John Najarian, thanks for joining us today. Let's talk next week.
All right. Thank you, Stephen.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, are you working in an office today or maybe from home? I think it's about 4 million Americans work remotely in one way or another, and the number is likely to continue to grow. On a phone line now is Scott Graff. He's the global president of BDC Meetings and Events. Scott, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Yep, thanks for being having me, Steve. Happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here. Tell me a little bit about BDC Meetings and Global Events.
Yeah, so we're a privately held company, about 1,500 employees, based here in the Chicago area, but operate with offices in about 50 countries around the world. And what we do is basically corporate meetings, corporate events, and corporate incentive travel programs for companies that choose to outsource those functions.
And what percentage of your employees work remotely?
On a global level, again, we're 1,500 employees globally, about 25% of those work remotely. But in the U.S., that number is 60% in the U.S.
Really?
Remotely.
Okay, so that begs the question, do we tend to work at home or remotely more in the U.S. than in other parts of the world?
I believe that we do. At least in our business, we do.
That surprises me a little bit, because it seems like in the U.S. we're more uptight about things than they are in Europe when it comes to vacation and other sort of amenities. So I'm glad to hear that anyway. The point you're here to make, though, is that maybe companies aren't fully embracing this notion, right, that they should be doing more to encourage it or to make it better?
Yeah, I mean, I believe it's a bit of a polarizing subject, because everybody looks at it very differently. I think it's important to evaluate, you know, what industry are you in, and does your business kind of allow itself and lend itself towards virtual employees? And then it's really, I guess if you can answer yes to those questions, then it comes down to the specific functions within a company. You know, obviously salespeople and sometimes marketing people are more tend to be virtual. But when you, you know, in our business, we have a lot of teams of people that need to collaborate to get the most effective, fastest solutions. So in those cases and in those jobs, we like them to be in an office.
You like the team members to all be in the same room when they're teaming.
Yeah, especially, again, for us in an operational. So we're doing hotel sourcing and we're planning events and we're coming up with cool creative ideas. We need those people together so those ideas just grow by the second.
It's funny because I was just at a family wedding a couple of weeks ago and met this young couple, and they could live anywhere they want because one was with a team headquartered in Connecticut, the other was with a team headquartered in Florida, but they could both work fully remotely and had absolute freedom that way. To me, it seems like it's one of those, it's not like a work-at-home or stay-at-home mom situation, but it's one of those things where if you're sort of ignorant of it, it's hard to understand. My job, you know, I'm faced on deadlines. I've got to be here. It's hard for me to understand how someone can work at home. My wife is a technical writer, and she's worked at home for almost 20 years. It's been beautiful. So how do companies make it work when it comes to their employees and keeping them at home?
Well, again, I can tell you how we make it work, and I really can't speak to others because I know some who do it very effectively and others that I don't believe do, and we see that with our, you know, with our customers and our competitors, et cetera. But for us, it's about very clear parameters and a very clear policy for working virtually.
You actually go and visit. You will go and visit your remote workers, right, just to check up on them or to sort of check in on them?
Well, I don't necessarily visit people in their home offices that often. I have. If someone's working, for example, in St. Louis or San Francisco and they work from their home office and I'm in town, yeah, I say, can I come to your office or would you like to meet at a coffee shop? But I'm not opposed to it, and I would hope that they're not opposed to having me there.
Sure.
But certainly in our, you know, the rest of our office locations around the world, I travel a lot. But again, back to your original question, I'd just say, having a clear policy that's fair and balanced. And while the employee wants something from their employer, which is freedom and flexibility, and we want to give that to them, you know, the balanced part of that is we have requirements of the employee in return. And that's, you know, everybody's going to have a camera on their laptop. So we're able to see them and we're able to connect via Skype video or whatever it is that we want. We're able to mandate and strongly encourage them to be in the office for certain days or certain functions
so Scott, you would connectivity. You would check in on them, just check the camera to see if they're at their computer?
I wouldn't just check to see if they're at the computer, but if I call them or have a meeting with them, I expect them to click their video on because I want to look someone in the eye, and I think most of our employees like that in return as well.
So no conference calls from the Dunkin' Donuts?
Exactly. We're not calling to check in on people, but when we do have calls, you know, we like it to be as realistic as possible. So, you know, let's look each other in the eye.
Scott Graff is the global president of BDC Meetings and Events. Listen, I'm glad you took the time to talk to us today. Thanks very much.
You got it. Thanks, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. Let's jump right in. Terry Savage is on a phone line. I hope you follow her column at terrysavage.com and her website. She's got a new column up this afternoon. And Terry's joining us on Tuesday because you're hosting a big luncheon tomorrow, right, Terry?
Tomorrow, 2,000 people gather for the annual Executives Club Economic Forecast Luncheon. I will not tell you how many years I've moderated it, but I feel like Jack Benny. At any rate, Diane Swank, Dr. Bob Frelick, and Jack Adlin of Crescent Wealth Advisors will be our panelists. And if you come to my website, I think I'll get it done by Thursday afternoon. I'll write a recap of what they had to say about the forecast.
Okay,
so
do you get nervous?
2,000 people tomorrow at this time.
Do you get nervous when you...
It's sold out, by the way.
Yeah, do you get nervous
when
you...
Do I get nervous?
Yeah.
I'm actually more nervous sitting across the desk from you.
Are you serious?
You never can tell what you'll say.
Wait, are you really serious?
No, Steve. I realize that, fortunately, I'm the moderator of this, so I get to ask the questions, and you never could tell what the answers will be in that event.
Yeah.
But don't you agree it's a little easier to be the question than the answer?
Yeah, come on. You're in safe hands with me. I would never do anything to embarrass you too much.
I know. I'm teasing.
You know, but one of the things, and I'm really glad you wrote this column, because I think it's a good for a couple of reasons. But I think we need to keep in perspective. You know, I come on every day and I talk about what stock is up and which one's down and the latest the indices where they are. And you know, it's easy to get lost in that and to sort of panic over it. But most of us, myself included, who out here and listening, we're long-term investors, and the day-to-day stuff that I talk about isn't always that relevant to long-term investors. It is to traders. And you wrote a column just up today about the differences between the two, and encouraging some people maybe to learn a little bit more about being an active trader.
Well, that's the key. The key to this is there's a 5-day seminar coming up a week after next. It's free. It's online. I argue this thing, nature versus nurture. Do you have some great instinct to be born a trader? I listened to Dr. Jay's response earlier, and of course, it's in the interest of all traders to get people to believe that they could learn to trade. And, you know, Dr. Jay is always telling people, here's how to trade this or that. I was a founding member and the first woman trader on the CBOE. Believe me, if I were inherently a great trader, I'd still be known on the floor and certainly made a lot more money talking about it than I ever did trading, because, A, I'm not a risk taker and I always get balanced out. That's just my nature and I've learned to understand it. But if you're going to be a trader, there's some stuff you have to learn. And there's a guy named Rob Hoffman, he's from Chicago, that created something called the Wealth 365 Summit. Now, you can get a link to it from terrysavage.com, the Learn to Be a Trader column, or just go to www.wealth365.com/pass, P-A-S-S. There are going to be 70 traders of everything from stocks to options to futures and foreign exchange doing free online seminars. You can check in, you know, from your office or your home, listen to them. Some of them are selling systems or newsletters and so forth. But the whole idea, says Rob Hoffman, is that just like an athlete who maybe is born with certain gifts, there are certain skills that can be coached, and these different traders that are presenting are giving you those opportunities to learn.
Now, this guy Hoffman has actually, you wrote in your column that he's won trading competitions. Is that like a poker? Are there trading competitions?
Oh, my gosh. This is like esports to the nth degree.
Really?
I didn't even realize. They have international trading competitions in Paris and in Italy and all over the world. And they're sometimes the big one that he won, the International Trading Championship at the Salon du Trading in Paris this last summer. It's not only futures, but it's options and stocks, and it's live. I think this is like watching, you know, that cage fighting kind of way, or the on TV.
And are they competing? They're competing with their own money, right?
Gladiators. Yeah, they're competing with real money, their own money. It's like gladiator sports. To me, this has nothing to do with what I call investing, with what I talk to you about every week. You know, put $200 in your 401k every month. Don't get scared out as you get older. Be more diversified and so forth. This is trading. This is pure and simple, in and out. And what signals does the market tell you? Not what is the underlying fundamentals of a company or a currency, but what signals do the patterns of the market give you? And, you know, I'm fascinated by it. It's not my thing. But, again, wealth365.com/pass, you can learn about it. You can buy an upgraded membership, which means you can go back and look at the videos. But you can attend these sessions. They'll be from January 21st through January 26th. And they've got some well-known names. Ralph Acampora comes to mind. He's a godfather of technical trading. So whether it's charts or signals or moves or trading into the box, whatever, you name it, they've all got a system. Now, if they all had a system and they were so successful, I always ask myself, why are they sharing their great signals and systems? So there's a line on the trading floor, never saw an old trader on the floor that was wealthy, because most of the time people make their money and get off.
All right, so if you want more, check it out. There's also a link or the information if you didn't get the website at terrysavage.com. Look, have a great lunch tomorrow, and we'll read about it Thursday on your website and then talk about it next Wednesday.
Absolutely, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. NABO. NABO? NABO. National Association of Women Business Owners.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh. And that national organization calls Chicago home. Never heard of them before? Well, they only happen to be the networking source for nearly 10.5 million women business owners in the country. And would you look at that? They're having an event at 1871. Their Think Big event is on Wednesday, January 16th, starting at 9 a.m. And you can just register online at 1871.com. They're definitely moving things forward in this world. And so are the people over at First Stop Health, the telemedicine startup that's just raised its second round of funding at $6.5 million, totaling $14.5 million. What sets First Stop Health apart from other health companies is their focus on working with doctors via phone, online video consultations, and through iPhone or Android apps. Man, this is straight out of the movies. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, Kelly Leonard's on the phone line. He's the host of the podcast Getting to Yes And. I love the subjects that Kelly covers, and he's got another good one this week. The guest is Brad Statz, who's a University of North Carolina professor and has written a book called Never Stop Learning. And he posits, Kelly, that we as humans are really bad learners.
We're really bad learners.
Really
bad learners. Physically bad. Yeah. And a lot of that is just sort of the way human beings interact and our assumptions. So one of the great things that he has in this book, he talks about how we're bad at listening, and we talk about this in improv the time. And he says the thing about listening is you shouldn't do it silently. That's not good listening. Good listening is actually when you're interacting with the speaker, when you play back what you're hearing. And this is especially when you're talking to someone who you might not agree with. So you don't have to agree with it, but you have to make sure you're accurately capturing it. And that's going to avoid misunderstanding.
Does he mean physically out loud reacting or just actively listening in your head?
No, physically out loud. So the worst thing you can do is just stay silent. Even just making a noise gives the person across from you an understanding that you're listening to them. But when you actually stop them and sort of say, hey, I want to make sure I get what you're saying, and you repeat it, even if you're wrong, the person across from you is going to be so appreciative that you're taking the time to truly understand them. That's a big thing.
So it doesn't have, it sounds like a marital discussion. Right? Oh, so I see what you're saying. Or
yes.
It doesn't have to be, you don't have to contradict them. You don't have to agree with them, but maybe just reassert what they're saying to further enable your own understanding.
Yeah, and Brad and I got into this conversation because this was one of the very first things that we came across when Second City started working with the University of Chicago, blending improv and behavioral science. And we led all these professors through this yes and exercise, you know, the base of the podcast, kind of the thing everyone knows about improv. And then they sort of said, well, this is great, but what if you disagree with the person across from you? What do you do then? And so the researchers went off and did their research. We went off and looked at improv exercises. And we came back to a thing that jives very well with what Brad's saying, and that's this idea around thank you, because. So if you're in a difficult conversation, you don't agree with someone, you thank them for the information they gave you, even though you don't agree, and then the because is crucial. Then you have to describe what they just said to you. And that's a way to stay inside a difficult conversation. And this has great relevance for the world we live in right now.
Tell me that again, because I'm not sure I understood that. Thank you and because. How does that translate to,
because.
I hear what you're saying.
So what it is when you say thank you to someone, especially if they're saying something that you might not agree with, you're setting off the gratitude part of their brain. So they are going to be more willing to sort of like share their information with you. And then when you take the time to then in the because aspect, you say, all right, so because I'm hearing this, I am now going to repeat to you what you just said to me. That also sets off a part of our brain which we really appreciate and we like, because it means that someone is trying to understand us. And then if the other person does that back for us, we can keep inside a difficult conversation.
I was reading about the book and some of his other arguments and how to become a better learner and things like that. And he talked about how we don't learn sometimes from our failures. And there's this one example, you probably come across it, but where he talked about soccer goalies.
He
said one of the things is, you know, we always want to be seen as doing something. And so when it comes to a penalty kick, if you're a goalie, you always dive to the right or to the left. But the fact is that 40% of the goal kicks go right down the middle. So the goalies you'd be more successful standing still, but that doesn't feed our humanness. We want to be seen as doing something. So we ended up hurting ourselves by diving right or left. That's fascinating to me.
It's completely fascinating because the data is crystal clear. But if you give it to a soccer player, no soccer player is actually going to take that and just stand there. No. And in fact, they're probably right because the coaches would take them out of the game.
I was thinking the fans. The fans would rip on a goalie who just stood still. All right, the name of the podcast is Getting to Yes And. You can check it out at WGNRadio.com. The host, Kelly Leonard. Kelly, great talking with you today.
Take care, Steve.